This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
What will our grandchildren experience in the year 2080? Or will some of you feel the heat, climate, and social disruption as soon as 2060? Scientific studies are pouring out their warnings. We have already passed the danger levels, and there is no sign of action to stop horrible climate change. What if the politicians fail to reduce greenhouse gas emissions enough to keep the Earth's climate from warming? What if the people of the world keep on pumping out carbon dioxide as they do now? Can we survive? Will the Earth hit runaway climate change, morphing to another Venus? The widely accepted danger line is 2 degrees Celsius, that's 3.4 degrees Fahrenheit, global mean temperature rise over pre-industrial levels. Land surface temperatures will heat up much more than that, and even more in the Arctic. We have already warmed at least 0.7 degrees Celsius, and we're seeing big changes now. Counting the masking effect of other pollution, the warming in the pipeline may already be around the 2-degree level, and the major polluters show no signs of agreeing to the steep cuts at the Copenhagen Climate Treaty talks in December 2009. So what will happen? In this program, we're going to cover major new scientific reports about our climate situation. Then, almost as a relief, we'll go to an interview with one of the longtime activists with solutions from the UK, Dr. Jeremy Leggett. He's an oil expert who crossed over to Greenpeace before becoming a solar energy entrepreneur. I also have some new climate music for you. Right now, we'll get hot and heavy with an international climate conference held at Oxford in Britain from September 28th to the 30th. The title is 4 Degrees and Beyond. We'll hear the results of some of the first scientific studies of a failed climate world. The conference opened with one of the top climate advisors in the world. Professor John Schellenhuber is from the Potsdam Institute for the Climate Impact Research. He is a past director of the Tyndall Center for Climate Research in Britain. The German version of his name is Hans-Joachim Schellenhuber. He has directly advised many heads of government, including Chancellor Angela Merkel of Germany and even Barack Obama. The title of his talk, Terra Quasi Incognita, Beyond the 2-degree line. This was a presentation to fellow scientists, so part of it is heavy going for the rest of us. It was also accompanied by slides, and I'll give you the web address for those a little later. So in order to hit some of the key points from this speech and several others from the 4-degree conference, covering several hours of audio, I'm going to attempt a digest of this latest science for you. Professor Schellenhuber explains that the 2-degree target was set in 1995 as the upper limit to avoid species extinction and other dangerous impacts. The 2-degree target was just adopted at the recent G8 meeting. Schellenhuber thinks a worldwide adoption of the 2-degree target is the best we can hope for in Copenhagen because, quote, nobody should dream of the possibility that there will be numbers reduction measure for each country in the world, which will be sealed in Copenhagen this year. That's almost impossible, end quote. 2 degrees is also the target set by the European Union. It's a compromise. Of course we can lose the coral reefs, he says, but we will save the Greenland ice sheet if 2 degrees over pre-industrial levels can be retained. More recent work, published in the PNAS, that's the Proceedings of the National Academy of Science in the United States, this year by J.B. Smith and others, including Bill Hare, shows that even the 2-degree limit may not be safe for us. A meeting of 2,000 scientists in Copenhagen last May issued another report which called for a peak in global emissions by 2015. Schellenhuber says we are lucky that the physics of Earth, which is usually nonlinear and discontinuous and very complicated, has provided us a simple yardstick to measure climate change, the amount of carbon dioxide released to the atmosphere. We can measure that easily and perhaps control it.
A Nature cover story, the coming climate crunch, that was, I think, in April, 23rd of April or something, where two groups, in particular Malte Meinshausen from Potsdam, together with colleagues, and Miles Allen here from Oxford, came up more or less with a similar approach, the budget approach, and it means more or less between the year 2000 and the year 2050, humanity is allowed to release about 1,000 gigatons of CO2 into the atmosphere, to the first order of our physics, climate physics. Unfortunately, we have eaten up already 300 in the first 10 years, so we are left with 700, 750 or something. If we want to have at least a 75% chance of holding the 2 degrees line, which is, by the way, not a brilliant chance. So if you would do that in a calculation of a nuclear power plant, so probably people would feel very uncomfortable if we would sit next to a plant where a 25% chance of getting it blown up would exist, but it's only about the planet we are talking about, so it's no problem.
How fast we get off oil and coal and how much time is left to preserve the remaining forests while controlling agricultural emissions, it all depends on when we start the cuts. The later we wait, the more wrenching the change will be.
If we would immediately peak next year, because of Copenhagen, with global emissions, when we would have to do every year a 2% reduction of emissions. That sounds very feasible. But now the vicious integral strikes. Integrals can be very vicious, as you may know, and this is one of the instances. If you wait another 5 years, when this amounts already to 3.6% reductions in a linear world here. But if you wait till 2020, which is much more likely, when you will have to reduce every year by 6%. And that is seems already unfeasible. And then you go on and on. But if you wait a little bit longer, you actually end up, starting with the year 2040, with negative emissions. That is, you have to extract carbon dioxide from the atmosphere, which may be done. I had a nice chat with Klaus Lackner from the Earth Institute at Columbia last week. But it can be done in principle, but it cannot be done in practice. That's the problem.
So if we wait until 2040 to start reducing greenhouse gas emissions, that total carbon budget will already have been spent. Nothing left for the rest of the century. Then we cannot emit carbon at all. We must start reducing it by some unknown technology. So we can't wait until 2040. The German Advisory Council worked out a fair way of distributing our remaining carbon budget, aiming at 2/3 chance of staying under 2 degrees. That's not a great chance, just 2/3 of a chance of staying relatively safe. They settled on a per capita allowance among all people of the world, balancing it out a little better each year, but disregarding our historical responsibility in the West for past emissions. The United States, which starts out emitting 20 tons of CO2 for each and every person every year, would have to stop emitting CO2 altogether by 2020. Germany, which has a lower per capita rate now, would have to stop by 2030. China would have to peak by 2020 and phase out by 2035. This report was presented at a meeting with the Obama administration, but it was felt that the Senate would never agree to ending fossil fuels in the U.S. by 2020. Note that a Zero Emissions America by 2020 is the project promoted by Al Gore. It exactly matches the science of what we need to protect the world climate. One solution is to allow countries like Pakistan and Afghanistan, where people produce and use very few emissions relative to their population, to allow these less developed countries to sell their carbon credits to wealthier nations. The result would be the largest north-to-south transfer of wealth in the history of the world, a reverse from the days of empires of Europe and North America. The physics of Earth doesn't care who burns it, just the total emissions reaching the sky. Research shows that if we double CO2 in the atmosphere, which is possible, the result in the long run, perhaps hundreds of years later, will be a 50-meter sea level rise. That's 193 feet. Enough to drown our coastal cities. Shellen Huber says, quote, "So even at 2 degrees, this is something which will sink most of our coastlines," end quote. Another scary result of climate disruption is the creation of dead zones in the ocean.
In particular, it means if we have unbridled climatic change, what we will see in the end is not so much sort of the carbon pump in the ocean will be suppressed, but there will be something like oxygen holes in the productive layer between 200 and 800 meters deep, which is very important for production of fish and so on, because there will be a complete depletion of oxygen, which is a new finding. You see it here, for example, in the Indian Ocean. That would be one of the not much discussed yet effects of global warming, unbridled global warming. Oxygen holes, like the ozone holes you have in the stratosphere.
We'll hear more about the possibility of a deoxygenated ocean leading to a possible mass extinction event when I interview Dr. Peter Ward about his new book, The Media Hypothesis. That's coming up soon on Radio EcoShock. We are digesting a speech by Professor John Schellenhuber at the 4 Degrees and Beyond Climate Conference at Oxford, UK, September 28th. Another recent scientific paper shows that even if we stop greenhouse gas emissions today, totally, the climate will already warm to 2.4 degrees above pre-industrial levels with severe climate impacts. So we are committed now. Scientists don't know whether the glaciers in the Himalayas will completely melt away from what we have already put in the sky. They are melting fast now. If we go beyond 2 degrees, Schellenhuber notes, those glaciers would go at some point, and they provide the summer river water for all the major rivers of Asia, used by over a billion people. Also interesting, some have called the Himalayan glaciers the third pole of the Earth, matching the Arctic and the Antarctic. The weight of the glaciers have geophysical implications. We don't know what will happen to the surface of the Earth if that weight is removed from this relatively new mountain system built from a collision of continents. The tipping point of the Greenland ice sheet, which is already thinning fast, as we find from very new scientific evidence coming from the satellites, that's also not known. But the giant in the room, the biggest tipping point, is the carbon trapped in the Siberian and northern Canadian permafrost. If that is released, says Schellenhuber, we are toast.
There is the really big giant in the game, that is the permafrost reservoirs of methane and other things. So the newest estimate is that over 1.5 trillion tons of carbon is stored there. And that's twofold the amount in the atmosphere, by the way. So if this is ever released, then we will be toast, of course.
Scientists have been investigating how these various tipping points might interact. For example, if the Greenland ice sheet melts, it will release a lot of fresh water. How will that impact the ocean thermohaline circulation system, including the Gulf Stream, that keeps Europe warm? Ocean circulation could also impact the summer monsoon in Asia, the water that feeds billions, although flooding millions. No research has yet been done on these large-scale interactions of tipping points. Dr. Schellenhuber and many others will be releasing a series of papers this December called the PNAS Special Feature on Tipping Elements. One of the presentations will be on dust as a tipping point. It turns out the largest source of dust in the world is the Bodele Depression in the African Saharan country of Chad. It used to be the bottom of Lake Chad, which doesn't exist anymore. Half the dust required to fertilize the Amazon rainforest comes from the Bodele Depression, spelled B-O-D-E-L-E. All the models agree that the Amazon rainforest will die back due to climate change, and we'll hear more about that later in this program. Other tipping points in the upcoming paper this December include the frozen methane on the ocean beds called clathrates and the impact of climate disruption on the El Niño Southern Oscillation in the Pacific, those heating of ocean waters that shape so much of our weather. There is good news and bad news about the clathrates, the methane ice balls down on the ocean floor. The good news is scientists think clathrate melting and the release of the climate-heating methane gas will be slow over centuries or even thousands of years. The bad news is it will be unstoppable once it starts. Let's hear Dr. Schellenhuber say it.
We have David Archer, who did together with his colleagues the first ever model study on the methane clathrates in the oceans, how they would be mobilized. So I'm not talking about the permafrost, I'm talking about the additional sources on the ocean shelves. And he came to the conclusion, together with his colleagues, that there will be a very slow release when the planet warms of the methane from these clathrates over 1,000 years maybe. He calls it an extremely slow tipping point. The problem is once it gets started, it's irreversible. And it would add another huge amount of carbon or methane to the atmosphere.
That study on clath rates coming out next December is by David Archer, our guest on the September 18, 2009 Radio EcoShock show. His new book is The Long Thaw. Download our interview with Dr. David Archer as a free MP3 from our website, ecoshock.org. What about the worst of the worst, runaway greenhouse effect? The temperature increases until the oceans evaporate. Earth becomes like Venus. Is it possible? Hans Joachim Schellenhuber thinks not.
Let me conclude speaking about the unspeakable, that is runaway greenhouse effect. And Anders Lieberman and another have done a fairly simple calculation. Now, what are the forces which we have to consider? The first one is the black body radiation, which goes to the fourth power of global mean temperature, which is in a sense equilibrizing everything we are doing. So this is the derivative of that is this line here. So if you change by 1 degree the global mean temperature, then of course this radiation goes up, and it's a negative feedback, if you like. That's very important. But there are positive feedbacks, and this is calculated here. If you add 1 degree warming, for example, you have water vapor, positive feedback, but you also release from permafrost, for example, carbon, you change the albedo of the planet, vegetation die back and so on. So in a sense, this was an attempt to say, here we have the negative feedback, let's measure the same metric, so to speak, the positive feedbacks. And then, of course, you have human intervention and human interference as a, not a feedback, but a force, which is actually shifting us along the temperature line, whether the feedbacks exist or not. And this is the conceptual approach. The question is there something like a runaway greenhouse effect? It's called the Venus effect. You would reach a certain point when a system starts to amplify its warming by itself. So you're just like pushing something over the ridge, and then by gravitation it gets accelerated and accelerated. We don't think there is such a thing on this planet. It never happened in history. The other thing happened, namely snowball Earth. So a runaway glaciation actually happened twice, probably. But we have not seen, probably we have no evidence for a runaway greenhouse effect. But there can be something like a limited runaway greenhouse effect, where you enter a temperature T1, and when the system by itself pushes temperature to another level here, and this could be a jump in temperature of centuries, whatever, by 5 degrees or something. And we cannot exclude that yet. So if you do the calculations, so the IPCC has, of course, looked at the feedbacks here, and has calculated, well, the distance to something like a runaway greenhouse effect, that means the positive feedbacks would have to add up to reach that line here, is just something like 1 watt per square meter, which is not much, actually, because you have to add human interference, clearly. The calculation which has to be done, you have to look at all the missing feedback. So it's oceanic CO2 uptake, it's albedo from Greenland, melting. Greenland is, again, the black horse in the race. It's probably the Achilles heel of this planet. You have thawing of permafrost and so on. You have something, I recall, I have given a lecture in this very room, actually, 10 years ago, Richard Betts has reminded me of that with Jim Lovelock. It was about Gaia hypothesis and so on at that time. So the DMS, you know, the cooling by sort of a Gaia, negative Gaia feedback by producing the right organic material to produce clouds and so on and cool the planet, was en vogue and has been heavily discussed. Actually, it is a feedback, a negative feedback, more or less one of the very few we can think of. Whether it's strong enough is a completely different thing. I don't think so. You see, most of the colors are red, so they add up. So it may be that if we go beyond the 2 degrees line, say 3 degrees, some of these things may add up to overcome and to overthrow the Stefan Boltzmann law, namely the black body radiation, and then the system will move by itself to a higher temperature. But we will enter ever something like a Venus process that would mean that all the oceans would have to evaporate and so on. I don't think it will ever happen. Unfortunately, we have never calculated this, and it can't be done with the state-of-the-art GCMs, of course. So we are thinking in Potsdam about doing first conceptual models about it, writing down the right nonlinear equations, and just to open up this field.
Black body radiation, what is he talking about? It's a physics term and a little complicated. For our purposes, when considering a warming planet, we know that the molecules and atoms of our physical reality vibrate differently when they are heated more. For purposes of measurement, the amount of radiation is compared to a standard, namely an ideal black body, which emits nothing. Everything emits black body radiation, even you. This is the scientific basis of the so-called greenhouse effect. The math formulas to calculate Earth's black body radiation are complex, but the main variable is temperature. I'm not a scientist, so if I have described this incorrectly, please write me with the correction. The address is radio@ecoshock.org. Schellenhuber says black body radiation is a negative feedback, meaning it actually helps to cool the planet. That cooling is overwhelmed by other positive feedbacks. Remember, positive doesn't mean good. It means a force which adds to an existing trend, such as global warming or increased precipitation. The positive feedbacks include more water vapor and possible releases from permafrost and so on. Schellenhuber doubts there will be a runaway climate change, the so-called Venus effect, because there is no evidence it has happened in the past. However, we could have a limited self-reinforcing warming, which would be disastrous for most species, including us. As it turns out, no one has been able to calculate whether a runaway greenhouse effect could happen. We just don't know. This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith. That concludes our summary of the opening speech at the 4-degree and Beyond International Climate Conference held at Oxford, UK on September 28th. It was delivered by Professor John Schellenhuber from the Potsdam Institute for Climate Impact Research. The title was Terra Quasi Incognita, Beyond the 2-degree Line. You can download the whole speech and others from that conference from www.eci.ox.ac.uk/4degrees. www.eci.ox.ac.uk/4degrees, or get that rather complicated link from the Radio EcoShock Show blog posted October 8, 2009. You can get our blog right from our main page at ecoshock.org. Let's take a quick break with a clip from Don't Kill a Watt by Seattle band Million Dollar Nile.
All of the CO2 we're jamming, and the coal-fired cannon, and all the rivers we slamming, and salmon we damming, it's a